Now back to Trevor for questions.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Keith. Chanel, why don't we open up the phone lines for questions?
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. Our first question comes from Scott Davis with Barclays.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Hey, Scott. Morning, Scott.
One of the things when we try to kind of model out margins and sustainable kind of margin expansion going forward, I mean, can you help us understand, you know, if there's any way to think about the 70 basis points, you know, how much of that was value gap, you know, how much of that is kind of from past restructuring, any way to kind of carve that up a bit?
Sure. If you look in the third quarter, Scott, value gap was about $50 million drag, actually, in the quarter. That was 0.2 of a point of drag. Mix, equipment versus services and other mix, was about 0.5 of drag, $120 million or so. And cost out is the real driver here. It's over $500 million. It's 1.4 points of improvement, and it's across the board. You know, it's lower variable costs. It's better base cost performance with this volume. And its simplification efforts starting to kick in. So I think I don't have it relative to prior restructuring, as you asked, but I think that's a pretty good framework for the third quarter. You know, it's great that the margins have turned positive here, and our expectation is that this margin improvement will continue in the fourth quarter, will increase, obviously, from the third quarter level to get us to our goal of the total year.
We still think value gap, Scott, will be positive for the year. It's been up more than $100 million year-to-date before Q3.
So for the total year, it will be
slightly
positive.
So for the
positive.
Total year, it'll be positive. And I expect it's going to be positive again in 13 as well.
Okay. That's helpful. Jeff, going back to kind of your beginning remarks on the macro view, I mean, it seems that looking at some of the results from your peers, that things have degraded a bit in the last couple months. I mean, when you're thinking about your planning scenarios for really 2013, because I'm guessing you're in that process now, I mean, What are the, you know, such a wide range of outcomes out there? I mean, what are you guys planning for, and how do you, you know, and I don't know how you want to comment on it, whether you dial it down by region and what kind of GDP assumptions, or whether you just want to talk about it more subjectively, but, you know, what do you plan for, I guess?
Well, you know, Scott, I think you got to have a pretty, you know, you got to factor in a number of different scenarios. I think most people are assuming that the fiscal cliff gets resolved in some way, and I don't think we're alone on that one. And then, you know, I think just when I look at orders in our growth regions, you know, we'll have 6 growth regions that have double-digit orders growth for the year, you know, 6 of 9. That's pretty good, Scott. That's, you know, that's that gives me some comfort when I look at, you know, the resource-rich and rising Asia. And so, you know, we still see decent opportunities in China. We still see decent opportunities in the Middle East and Latin America, Russia, places like that. And then Europe's going to be a grind. You know, Europe's going to be we're not assuming that Europe gets any better. So I think we're kind of looking at 13 being kind of like 12, with the big variable being the fiscal cliff. And, you know, we're ready if it doesn't go through, but we're kind of, I think, making the same assessment most people do, that somehow it gets resolved.
Okay. That's helpful. Thanks, guys. I'll pass it on.
Great. Okay, Scott. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Steve Tusa, J.P. Morgan.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, Steve.
Energy infrastructure, now I guess up 10% for the year. What was the expectation prior to this? It seems like that's, you know, the growth, you know, slows pretty materially in the fourth quarter. Is that timing around wind or something like that?
Yeah, there's another obviously large chunk of revenue in wind in the fourth quarter. And you know, it is a drag on us. I think that's probably the biggest factor for us. I mean, we still expect energy to be up double digit for the year. year to date, they're up about 12%, and for the total year to be up about 10, they'll be up in the mid-single digits in the fourth quarter here for us.
Right, and so how does that kind of make you feel heading into in the next year? I guess outside of wind, the trends there, and also I guess you talked about orders pricing being up 8% year to date, but it's going to come in flat, which means you're going to have a pretty tough orders number, orders pricing number in the fourth quarter. Does that change the views at all that you presented at the Investor Day several weeks ago?
Just to clear up, it's 0.8% year to date through the third quarter, and we're saying we expect it to be flat or slightly positive. So it's not a big change for the there's no change in the fourth quarter, and that's our total year estimate that we stuck to, Steve. So I think if you go by business, you got to feel great about oil and gas. We continue to build backlog. Our orders are strong. We had some orders slip even in the quarter. The outlook is very strong for next year as we head into the fourth quarter. For energy itself, you feel great about the move to gas around the world. It's certainly helping us in terms of our service outlook, and we got to continue to fight for every order they have on the gas turbine side. We're going to have we think we'll have growing megawatts of gas turbines sold. In the outlook,
In at the end of September, we kind of said power and water would be up in 12 and flat in 13, and it would be up really double digits ex wind in 13. I think we still think that's true.
Sure, that's the forecast.
We think oil and gas would be up double digits this year and next. We still think that's true, and we think energy management would be up double digits in 12 and 13, and we still think that's true. So. I think it's pretty consistent with what we said in at the Infrastructure Day.
Okay, and then in aviation, service revenues were only down 1, but the service orders were down double digit. What's going on there? I know there's some timing around the price increase that pulled forward some business last year. Can you maybe just talk about what you're seeing? Have things stabilized on the spare stuff, or maybe just give a quick update there?
Yeah, I think spares outlook seems to have stabilized. Gone from in the third quarter, in the second quarter, the spares rate was 20.6. In the third quarter, it's 22. Our outlook in the fourth quarter is similar to that. So right now in the third quarter, you're dealing with the biggest negative variance year over year, and we're kind of lapping ourselves on that. Our expectation is that at some point, revenue passenger miles are still positive year over year. Freight's down slightly. But at the end of the day, with all these flights going on, cycles occurring, there's going to be a pent-up demand for service here, and we expect that to be positive for 2013. So in the fourth quarter, we're not counting on that. We're counting on the spares orders to be about where they are today. We think that'll be a positive in 13, as I said.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Great.
All right, Steve.
Steve, thanks.
Our next question comes from Nigel Coe with Morgan Stanley.
Oh, thanks. Good morning.
Hey, Nigel.
Yeah, so aviation margins, if we strip out the prior gain, were obviously very strong. Can you maybe talk about, how the Gen X, the learning curve on Gen X is impacting the comparisons?
Well, in the quarter, there's a couple factors going on around Gen X. First of all, you have just a few lower units, so that's a little bit positive year over year. We had 28 units last year, 25 units this year, and then on a margin per unit, we continue to see good improvement. We're on track for our cost reductions as we come down the learning curve, and the other thing is that we're moving into better commercial arrangements as we get out of those launch orders for the Gen X shipments. So I think, it's on track, it's positive. In the fourth quarter, we're going to have a big increase in shipments here. We're going to go up the total year. We're expecting somewhere around 125 shipments, I think, Gen X engines. So you're going to have a in third quarter, they're down a little. In the fourth quarter, we're going to go from about 35 last year to close to 60 this year.
Okay. But is the contribution margin materially better on the Gen X versus last year?
Yeah, I think, the learning curve is down substantially. Nigel, and what Keith said is that the original launch orders are usually the most negative from a CM rate. So the combination of those two things, I think, builds every year. So that gets better in 13.
You're probably seeing 10% improvement in margins year over year, 11 to 12.
Yeah,
Okay. And then switching to thermal energy service, I think that was up 1%. To what extent is that number being impacted by deferrals on some of the regular maintenance schedules because of the low gas price?
If you look at the actual business in Q3, had revenue, I think, Keith, up 11 and earnings up 15, something like that.
The service, PGS, power and services.
So, you know, the run rate is not, you know, it's still a little bit lumpy, but the run rate's not bad. And then on the ongoing order rate was up 1%. And, you know, we still think that some of those are really based on how hard the units are running. And that unwinds itself. And then, you know, Europe, we have a relatively big installed base in Europe, and that has, to a certain extent, the opposite issue of units not running. But I think in the U.S., there'll be decent growth as time goes on.
I think the performance in the quarter, power gen services, you know, with profit
pretty good.
Up 15 was a pretty good quarter.
Yeah.
Right, right. And then just finally, you mentioned, you called out a couple of order deferrals, pushouts into 4Q. To what extent is that just normal lumpiness in the business, and to what extent do you think that's been impacted by, you know, some concerns around the macro?
Well, I just think you're always going to have some of that with some of the large orders we're dealing with. I mean, there was really nothing on the Asia aviation orders other than just timing of approvals, and it just didn't happen in the quarter that we originally estimated it. I think on some of the oil and gas orders, those are, you know, those are, involve a lot of parties with the large energy contractors and government approvals, and so I think they, that may be more typical that you're always going to have something pushing around. But for us, over $1 billion seemed to really push out of the quarter. There were other orders that pushed that seemed like, you know, normal quarterly things to us, but there were over $1 billion that we would have called out as pushing out.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Nigel.
Our next question comes from Stephen Winiger with Sanford Bernstein.
Thanks and good morning.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, just can I just switch over to GE Capital first? What, just help me understand, again, you mentioned the tie gain. What other gains were in there, and how much, again, was that tie gain? And were there any other gains in, baked into the GE Capital reporting numbers as sort of a normal course of business?
Yeah, the tie gain was $80 million
right.
from the sale of you know, the, some of our shares in Bay. We also had the gains in real estate that I talked about
right.
From selling properties. And you know, we had one other gain that was over $50 million in the quarter. It was the sale of a pipeline in EFS. So in the EFS results, that was the large driver of the earnings year over year.
Was that 15 or 50?
Those would be the ones. 58.
Oh, 58. Okay.
58 after-tax gain.
Okay. And then was there wasn't anything – I had heard something about the Irish Mortgage Bank. There was nothing on that?
I don't have anything on Irish Mortgage. I think it was closed.
Yeah.
The deal that we previously announced.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And then the consumer reserve, I just saw it go up from $3.1 to $3.4 billion. I'm looking at the credit metrics that you're showing in the supplemental and in the regular. I'm not quite sure I see the connection. Can you just give us some color for the overall increase in reserving and provisioning and what was driving some of that?
Sure. As I mentioned on the reserves in consumer, we did update our reserve practice for some more granular segmentation of loss types. Essentially what we're doing is we're doing a more detailed look at to determine the period of time from the loss event to the write-off, the incurred loss period it's called. So we did some of that work in the third quarter. The incurred loss period was a little longer using that segmentation. It increased our reserves about $200 million in the U.S. retail finance business in the quarter. You know, outside of that, we had the normal seasonality, which did contribute, and we had asset growth, which contributed to reserve growth quarter over quarter and also year over year on asset growth. So, you know, if you look, though, in total, assets are up 10 on retail finance, volumes up 10. The charge-off rates are down, Steve. They're down 24 basis points year over year, 36 basis points quarter over quarter. Delinquencies are down 36 basis points year over year. So the fundamentals of this business are still very good. It really is a detailed segmentation of the portfolio that added a couple hundred million dollars to the reserves as opposed to anything to do with asset quality.
Okay, and any impairments on GECAS?
Yeah, in GECAS we had impairments. The total number is about 135 after tax in the quarter. You know, I think in general I would say that some classic 737s were in there. Some A320s, old A320s, older A320s, as well as some 50-seat regional jets are probably the three things that would make up that number.
Okay, and last, let me just sneak in one industrial question. On the 29 gas turbines, what countries and where, that's, I know, a gross number. Any cancellations or deferrals of just the turbine side too?
Yeah, there were no cancellations in the quarter. You know, in terms of where the turbines were, there were quite a few from Saudi Arabia. Hang on one second here.
I'm mostly interested in the U.S.
I have zero in the U.S. We had 5 in China, 8 in Saudi, 2 in Algeria, 2 in Turkey, 7 in Iraq, 2 in Egypt.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Thanks, Steve.
Our next question comes from Andrew Obin with Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Good morning.
Hey, Andrew.
Question on GE Capital. As we look at ROI on new business, what's the sequential trend by business within GE Capital?
Well, I'll give you a few of them. See, if you look at the Americas for the commercial business, second quarter was 2.4, third quarter was 2.3. You look at Asia in CLL, 1.9, 1.9. You look at Asia consumer, 3.6, 3.4. You look at Europe CLL was 2.1 in the second quarter, 1.7 in the third quarter. You look at retail for us in the U.S., 4.7 in the second quarter, 5.3. So overall, you know, as I showed you, the net interest margins were up 50 basis points, and our new business ROIs are still hanging in there on new business volume.
Sure, and just also on GE Capital, as you extract more capital out of GE Capital, what should we expect for the pace of share buybacks relative to what we saw in the quarter?
Well, you know, we like the buyback pace in the quarter, over $2 billion, a little over $2 billion. You know, our objective, as we've said, is to continue to prioritize the dividend and grow that in line with earnings. We continue to have that point. The buyback, you know, our objective is to retire the shares that we issued before the financial crisis over the next several years, and, you know, we're doing a pretty good job on getting after that. And, you know, the cash from GE Capital obviously is a big help, so if we can continue to get the cash, although this year we've already gotten all the special dividends, now we're just getting the regular dividend on orders or on earnings, you know, that's going to help us a lot with the buyback. And, you know, based on the market, we'll see what happens in the fourth quarter. We expect to retire somewhere between 125 and 150 million shares this year.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks.
Next question comes from Deane Dray with Citi Research.
Hey, Deane.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Hey, just a clarification first. There's some headlines coming up about the revenue guidance, total revenue guidance going from 5 to 3%. So you told us that GE Capital revenues are down. Maybe there's some FX, but just, you know, if you could parse out for us what the delta is.
That was the biggest change.
It's really GE Capital.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if anybody's really forecasting FX. Obviously, FX had a big impact on us in the quarter, certainly industrially, but the change on the framework that we showed you was what Jeff said. You know, the GE Capital total year revenue is going to be down closer to 10 than 5, and we thought that was worth updating.
Good. Just want to make sure, because there's a couple of headlines out there, and that clears that up. And then on the cash flow, you said there was some equipment build in the third quarter. That gets resolved. What's the business and any color there regarding the size?
Sure. You know, obviously, we've built up some working capital to support our fourth quarter shipments. You look at it's mostly in energy. Energy's working capital bill was $1.3 billion through the third quarter. And, you know, we're expecting a big fourth quarter in terms of deliveries. If you look at the profile last year, third quarter to fourth quarter, we had a big revenue increase between the quarters. We also had a significant increase in cash flow between third quarter and fourth quarter. Fourth quarter will be our biggest cash flow period for the year. And, you know, we're expecting a profile similar to last year, a little higher than last year in terms of cash coming out of industrial in the fourth quarter.
And progress on the red assets at GE Capital?
You know, I don't have a specific number. I know in total, you know, we're down about $6 billion. How much? $6 billion on quarter over quarter. Yeah, and there's about $70 billion on balance sheet today on the red assets. So in the quarter, you know, we felt great about it. You know, you look at the runoff we had. I'll just give you some numbers on some things that are down year over year. UK home lending's down $1 billion, Dean. France is down $1.5 billion. Poland's down $1.3 billion. Spain's down $1 billion. You know, those are all non-core assets that we're running off here in a pretty good pace.
Great. Just last question for me is maybe some commentary regarding the debt issue for the parent, because that certainly doesn't happen often, and it's never a better time to issue debt when you don't really need the financing. But just give us a context. There's $7 billion. You did it in three tranches. What are the use of the proceeds?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to the first question about what do you think about the environment. I mean, as we look forward, we have a $5 billion debt in GE that matures February. And so we decided that we really didn't want to be trying to replace that debt in an environment where the fiscal cliff may be a disruptor or not. So we decided to go in the fourth quarter. We like the rates. As you said, we did $7 billion. We'll have a big interest savings if you look on that debt. We'll probably have annual savings around $70 million at the rates that we did that debt at, with a mix of 5, 10, and 30 years, as you know. So, we decided to get that out of the way. We know we have to do it. We didn't want to do it in a disrupted environment. We like the rates where they are. It creates a savings for us. Now, we do have a little higher interest cost in the fourth quarter because of that, but, for us, it just seemed like the right thing to do.
That's real helpful. Thank you.
Dean, are you clear on the revenue point?
Absolutely.
I just want to make sure it's clear to everybody.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Great.
Our next question comes from John Inch with Deutsche Bank.
Thank you. Good morning,
everyone. Hey, John. Morning,
John. Hi, guys. Keith, maybe a question for you. It's really on the Buffett warrants. With your stock price sort of where it is, I'm just wondering, what are you thinking of in terms of possibly maybe buying them in advance? And if you don't do that, is there a dilutionary impact kind of on a net basis to this that provides for a headwind that maybe we should be thinking about?
Yeah, John, if you think about it, the dilution is on amounts above 22.25.
Right.
And, it's de minimis. Even if we'd love to have the stock go up, to 25.25, it's still, that would be less than $400 million of dilution. I think it's 135 million shares that you're talking about the dilution on. So I'm thrilled that we're in the money on them, and yet we're going to have to deal with the dilution, but I don't think it's a big deal for investors.
Okay, good. That clears that up. With zero U.S. gas turbine orders, can you just remind us, what is your sort of latest thought toward the timing of a U.S. gas turbine cycle recovery? Kind of, years, and maybe you could blend that in with a little bit of your pricing, kind of what you're seeing on the pricing side, that sort of thing.
John, I would just go back to what Steve basically said in September. I think we think there's activity right now that's going on that'll turn into commitments next year. So I think as you go into 13 and into 14, those commitments will go into orders, and I think that pace will grow as each year goes by. So we're seeing quoting activity right now. We expect to book some orders next year, and we think that'll grow over time. I think the good news is that gas is the fuel of choice, and as new capacity comes in, it's going to be gas turbines.
Yeah, so if the trajectory holds, presumably the price, though, doesn't start to meaningfully kick in until, 14, if the timeline,
Look, I think the good news, John, is that we've been kind of firming a bottom right now. So I think you could see some positive OPI into 13, not great, but some positive, just because I think we've been troughing for the last period of time. So I think that will start improving, and then I think it accelerates as time goes on.
Just lastly, Jeff, with the cash and the cash position in pretty robust shape, what are your thoughts toward maybe upping your M&A spend targets? Just even given the macro sluggish environment, that might be perhaps prompting more companies to consider selling or make more properties available. What are your thoughts here?
I go back, John, to our disciplines. I think dividend in line with earnings. We think the dividend is really important. Continuing to buy back stock with an eye on getting back to 10 billion shares at some point and the $1 to $3 billion. So if we see, if we see a good acquisition in that range that meets our hurdle rates, we'll go for it. But it's not burning a hole in our pocket, and we don't think we need it to do what we need to do in 13.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Our next question comes from Shannon O'Callaghan with Nomura.
Morning, guys.
Hey, Shannon.
Hey, so just, back on the resegmentation of the U.S. retail business, what was the thought process behind making that choice? And then the extra provision in the quarter, was that sort of a catch-up, or what's the sort of normalized annual hit to earnings relative to the way you used to segment it?
Yeah, I think we're going through a process in the retail finance business to take a look at our reserve practices and our segmentation relative to industry standards. You know, in the quarter, we did a couple of factors. We did aged accounts, and we did fraudulent accounts. I mean, we're basically trying to identify individual events and then go back and say, how long is the incurred loss period for that type of event? And, you know, there will be, you know, there are other categories we're still looking at, you know, if people pass away, if people reach settlements, if people have bankruptcies. So we're, you know, we're basically trying to segment that book into very detailed and more conservative, realistically more conservative look at reserve positions based on when the incurred loss period actually started. So I think in the quarter there's no more to come from those categories. I think we're going to continue to look at these other categories. To us, we're just trying to make sure that we're in line with industry practices, and it's something that we're going to do through fourth quarter and first quarter, I believe.
Okay. And so, I mean, any estimate of sort of what the more conservative method is in terms of a dollar amount on the earnings impact for a year?
I don't. I'd say the one thing I'd look at is if I think about the outlook from third quarter to fourth quarter, you know, I think retail finance probably has an outlook that's similar in the fourth quarter to what they had in the third quarter.
Okay.
So even though they've had this one-time thing, I think if you look at the outlook, it's probably going to be based on volume growth and based on whatever we're doing with reserves, you know, our outlook is probably close to what we had in the third quarter.
Okay. And then just energy into 4Q, I mean, can you give us a little more feel on the number of sort of wind turbine units and the pressure you're expecting? I mean, the margin this quarter was like, you know, 13.6 for sort of the pure energy business. You normally have this, you know, seasonal uptick, but you've got this pressure. Can you maybe gauge where you see those going?
You know, I gave you the total number. You know, if the total year is going to be up 10%, and you look at where we are third quarter to date, you know, I think you can get a pretty good estimate of what we think the margin is for energy for the fourth quarter. I don't have the exact dollars, but I mean that math's pretty clear.
And what are you thinking for wind turbine units?
It's 750 or so.
Yeah.
750 or so,
yeah.
Units.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Our next question comes from Jeff Sprague with Vertical Research.
Thank you. Good morning,
hey,
gentlemen.
Jeff. Hey,
how
Jeff.
You doing? Hey, good morning. Thanks. I wanted to drill a little bit farther into power service, if we could. Some color on what you're actually seeing, you know, your customers do, right? So you're running at higher utilization. I wonder if there's some dynamic, though, that we're running more baseload as opposed to kind of peaking cycles, and that's, you know, is that playing into what seems to be softer orders there than I guess we would all guess, given kind of the trends in the business right now?
I think you heard some of this from Steve Bowles at the infrastructure meeting, Jeff. You know, basically, you're absolutely right. I mean, people are running the gas turbines a lot more, and they are running them as base load, and that is ultimately good news. And you know, I think the idea is going to be you're going to have either sooner maintenance needs, or maybe there'll be a little deeper overhaul when you get into fix, you know, and repair these units when they do have an overhaul. But Steve's message was, you know, that these are going to pull in, you know, running these things at full baseload power at this point is, you know, maybe pulling in overhauls by 3 months, 6 months in the out years. These overhauls are pretty well scheduled based on times the units are going to run. So I think it's a positive. I think it's all positive, but I think it's a little further out there. But right now, they're definitely running gas turbine units a lot more, and they're running them as base load.
You know, Jeff, we said in September that we expected, you know, good earnings growth for power gen services in 2013, and we don't see anything that changes that assessment.
Yeah, I thought the comment actually was flattish for 2013 on services. No.
Flattish overall for the
power and water business, but for services we expect growth. Wind to be negative.
You know, as we get closer to this wind downturn, is it actually playing the way you thought, you know, in terms of the magnitude of drop next year?
You know, Jeff, it is. I think, you know, we expect revenues will be down, you know, probably 40%. Something like that next year, and we've always said that it would be you know, about 3 pennies of headwind next year, and And that really assumes kind of no market in the U.S. You know, there's some discussion about whether or not there's a production tax credit as you do some kind of tax deal at the end of the year. And if there is one, I think that would be good for the business, but it's not something we're counting on.
And then finally, just thinking about cash flow, I mean, it does look like a challenge in Q4. The idea of the working capital draw is understandable. But does that cash flow forecast, is it also predicated on, you know, particular order strength in the fourth quarter that would drive deposits or progress payments? Is that any part of your
equation? Not really, Jeff. I think progress remains a headwind. It's an unusual year just because of the spike in wind and stuff like that. So this has just been an unusual year from that standpoint. But I think, you know, we see the working capital levers for cash.
It's a pretty similar profile to last year in the fourth quarter. I think the one difference is you do have the wind progress coming down, and we factored that in, Jeff. You know, we don't have any replenishment of the wind progress in the forecast, and basically we're shipping that in the fourth quarter. So I think we're taking that into account. But, you know, it's a big fourth quarter, and we got to execute.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Our next question comes from Julian Mitchell with Credit Suisse.
Hey, Julian.
Hi.
Good morning.
Firstly, on aviation, I just wanted to follow up on your comments around some push-outs at some Asian carriers. And also in the segment profit growth, I mean, you call out, you know, the value gap and productivity driving up EBIT year on year. I just wanted to check what the latest thoughts were on R&D, you know, around the headwind there, you know, in light of the LEAP 1A and 1B designs being frozen. Are you still on track for kind of R&D to start moving flat to down in 13?
Yeah, we're on track for the R&D. If you look at the margins in the quarter, stronger pricing was a big part of it, and cost productivity was the other part that aviation got, and we expect those two factors to continue. If you look at R&D and aviation itself, it was up about it was down about 7%, and it's holding steady around 5% of revenue. So as a percent of revenue, as we said, we don't expect this to continue to be a drag. We'll see what happens as we get into 13. But you know, we like the position we are in those engines. You know, we've gone to design freeze on two of the three versions of the LEAP, and we're on track for the design freeze on schedule for the third version.
Thanks. And just the comments around some of the push-outs on the OE side.
Oh, the push-outs, yeah.
Yeah,
it's purely, my understanding of it, it's purely a signature approval. And it's not someone wondering whether they're going to take these planes. And so we're highly confident that these orders are going to happen in the fourth quarter. And, you know, it's two customers, and it's about $500 million. Now, again, if you remember last year in the fourth quarter, I think the equipment was up 20%+.
Huge order quarter
in aviation. So, again, with these backlogs, we're going to have that type of lumpiness. But these orders, there's no, it's not like someone worrying about their fleet planning or anything.
Got it. And then just secondly on healthcare, you know, the picture of the past 12 months has been, you know, very good growth in emerging markets, Europe very weak, and the U.S. kind of hanging on. You know, looking at the U.S. equipment order trends the last couple of quarters, I mean, are you worried that that's starting to roll over? You know, maybe 6 months from now, the numbers are looking, you know, down kind of high single digit, that sort of range, as you're looking at U.S. healthcare specifically.
I don't see that, Julian. You know, I think it's kind of, it's around flat, and it's going to continue to be around flat, and there's nothing that our guys see that suggests it's getting materially worse as time goes on. I just think it's a tough market, but it's not like Europe.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, great. Chanel, we have one to finish up by 9:30 because of some other earnings calls. Let's take a couple more and then close out.
Will do. Our next question comes from Jason Feldman with UBS.
Good morning.
Hey, Jason.
Just wanted to follow up on the aviation aftermarket. You talked about expectations of improvement next year. Wondering if you had any sense of what kind of impact you've had this year from the kind of earlier than normal retirement of younger planes and cannibalization for parts, and whether you expect that to continue or whether you really haven't seen much of that.
You know, that's been part of our run rate and analysis for the business already, to take a look at, you know, where are used serviceable parts going to come from. I think the biggest impact that we've had this year really has been on the wide body. It's the CF6 is down. It's down by overhaul sales and freights, and it's really a maintenance pressure on us. While the CFM products and the G90 products are both up. So you know, on the more prevalent install base narrow body growth that we've had, you're starting to see those engines come in for overhaul. Certainly the G90 and the 777, you're seeing those engines come in for overhaul, and we're just seeing a push out. I think a lot of it's freight. I think some of it's Europe, and some of it's some of the older applications the CF6 is on, and we're really having to deal with that more than cannibalization of on the narrow body product.
Okay, thanks. And briefly on capital, we've heard a lot this earnings season about CapEx kind of being pushed out. You've certainly alluded to the fiscal cliff and whatnot. Have you seen any impact on CLL loan demand, or is there still sufficiently few competitors that you're still able to originate as much as you want there?
Well, we said the commercial volume's down about 5%. I think a big part of that is this. It's uncertainty. It's people not willing to spend until they have a more certain environment around whether it's taxes or healthcare, social costs, or things like that, and just the general backdrop in terms of confidence. So I think we have seen some of that. We are seeing a nice volume in the equipment side in the CLL business, but on the CapEx side, I'd say that's been soft.
Soft, yeah.
Great, thank you.
Thanks.
And our final question comes from Brian Langenberg with Langenberg Investments.
Hey guys, really quick one.
Morning, Brian.
Morning. About the $300 million of restructuring you did, can you just layer that around the segments, like how much impact there was in each of the industrial segments?
Sure. If you look at it by business, mm-hmm. I'll give you after tax numbers. Energy was 50.
Uh-huh.
Healthcare was 27.
Uh huh.
G Capital was 25. HMBS mm-hmm. was 17, aviation was 16, and about 100 was associated with the plant exit.
Okay, great. All right, we'll follow up later, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Great. Just before I wrap up, I just wanted to give some thoughts about the company going forward, and just with all the volatility in the environment. I think our aviation business, we're really winning in the marketplace with a massive backlog. Oil and gas is a fast-growth market with a lot of opportunity for expansion. I think our power and water business is really well-positioned for a gas cycle. Healthcare remains a diagnostics leader with a great growth market foundation. Our transportation business is well-positioned for growth based on new technology and global expansion. Energy management has room to grow. And our consumer businesses will benefit from an improving housing cycle. GE Capital is smaller, stronger, and more competitive. And we're operating the company well with large backlogs, I think successful acquisitions, expanding margins, and substantial cash. So from an investor standpoint, while the environment is volatile, I think our path for growth and execution is very well understood by the team, and we think this quarter demonstrates that, and we think we feel good about how we're positioned for the fourth quarter in 2013. So, Trevor, thanks, and
great. Thanks.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Jeff. A couple of items just to close out the day. Replay today's webcast will be available this afternoon. We'll be distributing our quarterly supplemental data schedule for GE Capital later today. I do have some announcements of some upcoming investor events. First, on Wednesday, December 12th, Steve Bowles, our president and CEO of GE Power & Water, will host a plant tour at our manufacturing facility in Greenville, South Carolina. More details will be sent in the coming weeks about that. Second, our annual Outlook meeting, investor meeting with our chairman and CEO, will be held in New York City, likely to be at 30 Rock again. It'll be held on Monday, December 17th. We'll send out more information regarding that event. And finally, our fourth quarter 2012 earnings webcast will be held on Friday, January 18th. Thank you, everyone. As always, we'll be available today to take your questions.
This concludes your conference call. Thank you for your participation today. You may now disconnect.